Welcome back to the Texan Stock Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, joined by my co-host, John Crumpler. Where can folks find you on Twitter, John?
You guys can find me at Texans Doc. It's been quite the week. Give me a follow and make sure you're following at the Texans Wire. Mark, what about you?
You can follow me at The Real Mark Lane. Now, when you say it's been quite the week, you're talking about all of your med school drama, right?
I wish I was talking about that. I feel so bad. I've been quite absent-minded in the hospital. Still making it to everything, still doing my job. But man, this Deshaun Watson saga, does it get any more dramatic? I can't remember something like this happening in the NFL ever.
The Brett Favre retirement stuff would kind of drag on this long, but it would resolve within an offseason. This has been a multi-offseason thing. Maybe you could say the Le'Veon Bell, but again, that just wrapped, that went through, I think, the 2019 offseason, and then it wrapped up by 2020. I think it was 2018 then. Yeah, 19 he went to the Jets. But still, those things, they didn't have this magnitude because this incorporates, unfortunately, an off-the-field element that I think has also wrapped itself into it and to whether or not it gets resolved. But it really has been dramatic, and it's funny because on the communications with the other Wire editors that have been involved, our Saints Wire editor and Panthers Wire and Falcons Wire, because, you know, Watson's looking at those teams, one of them made the remark that, hurry up and get it over with. And I'm like, really? Really? I've been feeling this way for 14 months. You've only been feeling this for 14 hours. Don't tell me about wanting to wrap this up, okay?
I mean, I totally agree with them, though. It has been freaking exhausting. Every Twitter notification, I mean, every update, it feels like we're on pins and needles just waiting for Watson to make a choice. It is tiring. I'm kind of sad I was in that group chat, though, Mark.
Yeah. my favorite is when you get these Twitter handles like, you know, Fat ATL, whatever the area code is in Fulton County Sports. And then they say, per source, Deshaun Watson is considering the Falcons. And then Aaron Wilson has to come in and smack it down and say, no decision's been made yet.
Are you talking about what just happened an hour ago? If ATL Sports Talk Jake and dude, Benjamin Albright bodied him.
Yeah, that's the one. But you know, but in a way, I think that those actually have value because you saw what it did. It drew out Aaron Wilson to say there's still no news, which is kind of what people want to know as well, is what's the situation? Is there news? So in some ways, it's kind of good when those tweets come out.
Yeah, it does give us an update, and I understand there's a lot of incentives for reporters to hold off on their information until they can publish the story the way they want. But, I mean, you and I both, we've had this for a year. We've had these, Mark and I have had some calls this week talking about these articles we've had in our drafts about the Deshaun trade, and it's been 13, 14 months now. We're ready to see this thing happen.
Yeah, we really got the content ready to go at Texans Wire. I know it was the third topic, but we'll just go ahead and go to just where do you want to see Deshaun Watson go? What's your team?
Well, it depends on if we're being realistic or not. In a perfect world, I'd love to see him go to Carolina, get that sixth overall pick. Carolina's not winning any games in 2022 with Matt Rule at head coach, so you have a really good first-round pick next year. I mean, maybe you get the 2024 pick as well. And then you look at those players, Derek Brown, Brian Burns, Jeremy Chinn. That was the dream package, but we know that's not happening now. So between Atlanta and New Orleans, I still prefer Atlanta. It's a top 10 pick this year. They haven't traded away any of their day two picks. So I imagine we get a second rounder as well for 2022. And If you guys don't know, this is considered, it's a really deep draft. So top 50 picks are extremely, extremely valuable. So we get two of those with one of them in the top 10, and then you get future ones. And I think Atlanta would have at least another season before they're able to put a contender around Watson. Well, if we trade him to New Orleans, I might like the New Orleans players a little bit better than I like the Atlanta players, but they're going to win immediately. And I mean, we saw what happened to Detroit. If you trade your franchise quarterback to a team that can compete right now, you might end up getting pick 32, which for a first-round pick, about as bad as it can get.
Right. And you nailed it. With the Saints, I feel like you get the picks to compete now. I should say the players to compete now. But with the Falcons, there's an opportunity for draft picks. So if I'm Watson, though, I would go to Atlanta, because I feel like Atlanta's really the place where he can rehabilitate his image, and he grew up there. I think it would behoove him to go to Atlanta. But if he went to New Orleans, then I think that they're contenders immediately, because they've solved the quarterback position. And I know for sure they would be contenders immediately if Sean Payton would have stuck around. But between those two teams, I think he should go to the Falcons. And that also – but in going to the Falcons, I don't know, because I kind of want the players. I kind of want to get done with this whole rebuild thing immediately and get back to competing. To even if it's for the equal attention birthday cake wildcard spot, the seventh seed in the AFC. I just want to see Houston back in the mix with the playoff race and not trying to compete with the Jacksonville Jaguars for the bottom of the division.
Yeah, and I mean, we might be away from that regardless. I think it's hilarious that Houston plays the AFC West this year, as we see yet another trade just about a half hour ago. Davante Adams moved to the Raiders, but yeah, I'd like to see some players, because frankly, it's hard to build through the draft. If we could get a few immediate things in the AFC South, which feels relatively wide open, no one has a franchise quarterback other than the Jaguars, and the Jaguars are the Jaguars. I'd like to get some definitive pieces. And when you look at the New Orleans package, I think it's Cesar Ruiz, the 2020 first round pick at guard. And he's been fine by everything I've read, but nothing special. And then a cornerback whose name I cannot remember, but he scrubbed all of his New Orleans mentions from his Twitter and has been complaining all day. So everyone is speculating that he's been told if they move for Deshaun, he'll get moved. I'm not impressed by what New Orleans is doing.
Yeah, and either way, it's over with. I believe in Nick Caserio and his ability to find the best draft picks and to utilize them. Not just they're going to take this specific guy at this specific spot, but in creating draft packages to move up and take a guy that they want. So even if they do go with the Atlanta route and they're just hoarding draft picks, I still believe in Nick Caserio's ability to create packages and pinpoint and find the guys in the draft that they want that can help them. The thing is, you know, they won't help immediately in October the way that a veteran would. But by the end of the year, when it's December and the first 2 weeks of January, those guys will, you know, have performances like Roy Lopez and Davis Mills that you can look at and say, hey, we're good at this position and we can build around this going forward. So I feel like with the Saints trade, they're back. If they go the Falcons route, they're still a year away.
Well, they could get some good players from the Falcons. I mean, if AJ Terrell actually came here, which I don't know what to believe. There's so many reports, but he kind of got snubbed for first team corner. I know you're a Falcon. You're a Cowboys guy, so you might disagree, but AJ Terrell had quite the year for the Falcons, and he would be an immediate lockdown number one corner in Atlanta. I mean, in Houston, something we haven't had in a long time. Yeah, maybe the Saints have – it's hard because the Saints have better players in Atlanta, but it's hard to feel good about it when the players are definitively, I think, much worse than the Carolina players. I've had a hard time getting excited about it. But either way, whether it's Nick Caserio making the choices or him identifying talent on other teams, we're going to be a lot better in 2022.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that they've definitely taken a step in terms of at what phase of the rebuild. They're so close to completing the rebuild that you can see it. It's just right on the horizon, and really passing through the Deshaun Watson trade just ends it all, and I think it's over with. There's no more lingering storylines. They've finally moved on from everything, and it's a clean slate. I think it's funny, though, that you've got that if Watson goes to Atlanta, you basically got another Atlanta quarterback in Houston in Davis Mills because he went to the greater
GAC. Some of my classmates went there. Greater Atlanta Christian, I think.
Okay, yeah, I goof it up because I get messed up because there's the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Houston, and so it's just that Greater Atlanta and Houston stuff. But that would be funny if Watson did go to Atlanta. But let's try to focus on what Houston has done to this point, which to me has just kind of been like filling out their roster. In terms of their free agent signings, has there been anyone that you've liked so far?
I'll give three signings. The guys that I like, they brought back Malik Collins and they brought back Desmond King. I thought those were two guys we were going to get priced out of. And they're really good football players. I don't think their production and what we saw in 2021 matches their level of talent. When you put better pieces next to them, the Texans' first-round pick and their second-round pick, those guys you get in the Watson trade, other guys we might bring in with free agency from the money we free up from trading Watson, those are two guys that will only perform better around superior talent. I like that a lot. And then another name that I'm going to have to figure out how to pronounce, Agbanya Akoronkwo, the edge rusher from the Rams. It looks like he did a lot with pretty limited snaps on a stacked Los Angeles Rams Super Bowl team. I'd like to give him a bigger role and see what he can do. What about you, Mark? What signings get you excited from this class?
Yeah, to me, it feels like the Okoronkwo signing was really kind of a replacement for Jacob Martin since he got away to the Jets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Desmond King I thought was a good signing because, I mean, even though it's a re-signing, because he was a guy that's played slot corner for most of his career, and he was a team player and played on the outside. And that's what you need in your locker room and on your defense are guys that are willing and they love ball. And I think that Desmond King demonstrated, and he got three interceptions. I mean, it wasn't like he was just, a Philip Gaines, okay? He actually had some utility playing at the cornerback position. I noticed that they brought back Royce Freeman. I don't know. I kind of like it because I want to see what he could do. But I feel like they're really, when they get him and they sign Dare Ogunbowale, that they are really just filling out the roster so they can have their 90-man offseason roster and that they're really going to fill this in the draft. At least I would hope that they treat running back that way because, like I said, they have been cheap at running back since Arian Foster. In 2017, they did take with a third-round pick Dante Foreman, but other than that, they just really haven't invested too much in running back, and I'd like to see them do that, specifically since they're going to be a run first offense. But those are some signings that I liked. I don't know if it counts, but that they got the Tunsil deal done, that they, that he's coming back, you know, Jordan Belfont style. You know, that was pretty good to get Tunsil back and to not have to worry about your bookends. They're Laramie Tunsil and they're Titus Howard, which should end all of the mock draft nonsense about taking Evan Neal, number 3 overall.
Yes. Yes, it should. I'm sorry. I got to circle back and push you on the Royce Freeman thing. I think he is a certified, I'm not going to say bum, but I don't think he's a great player. He's at best, you want him to be the third best running back on your team, and right now he would probably be the number 2. Feels like a waste of a roster spot. He's someone that I would hope gets cut in camp. I don't even think he's better than Rex Burkhead right now. I mean, all the guys you could have given money, I would have rather seen. I bet Marlon Mack goes for a similar price. I was pretty disappointed to bring him back, so I was surprised to hear you say that, just because I think he's a very known commodity. He's going into his 5th season in the league. Last year, he averaged 3 yards a carry. He can't catch out of the backfield great.
That's why I want him back, is because he is a known commodity and he's someone that your younger guys can beat off the can beat and you know, compete and, you know, put him on the waiver wire. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, it could be worse, I guess, but I don't love it. I don't love the running backs. I do agree with the sentiment that it looks like they're going to take a running back on day 2. I saw a tweet that talked about Lovie Smith basically always had a bell cow running back when he was in Chicago. And maybe that's something they'll value, especially with how much Pep Hamilton wants to run the ball. They could do it at 37, or if they make this trade with Atlanta, I think Atlanta has 41 or 42. That'd be a great spot to take Isaiah Spiller or Kenneth Walker. And it would be fun to have a really good running back on this team.
Yeah, and that's what I think that they need, is someone that is your Thomas Jones, your Matt Forte, someone like that, as opposed to just how they went last year. And that's why I said Royce Freeman, because it's kind of like the Davis Mills thing. You want a quarterback that he can challenge and overcome in camp. And if that running back can do that in the offseason, good. And that's why I liked Royce Freeman also, is he's been in the system. He knows what Pep Hamilton's objectives are going to be. He has a little bit of chemistry and camaraderie with the running back room and with the offense. So he's, you know, the perfect glass jaw. That's why I liked seeing him come back.
Okay. And then you brought up Evan Neal being eliminated as the pick. Did you think it was interesting that Las Vegas odds opened up on each selection today and Evan Neal is the head-on favorite to be at number 3? Do you disagree with that?
Yes, because they're not going to move Titus Howard inside, and they didn't restructure Laramie Tunsil to move him, and he didn't post that tweet from Wolf of Wall Street because he's leaving, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's here to stay, and I also agree with you, Howard. We saw it last year. He is not a very good guard, and even if he's a fine guard, he's a much better tackle. I would be upset if they took Evan Neal. Would you be okay if they took Ikamwu from NC State and played him at one of the guard positions?
No, I really wouldn't, because I think that they need – I'm too much – I have imbibed too much of the Kyle Hamilton Kool-Aid, and now my receptor sites in my brain can only take the dopamine hit of envisioning Kyle Hamilton in the Texans secondary, and anything else is just an absolute consolation that's disappointing. So no.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Mark. I'm starting to become irrationally attached to the idea of Kyle Hamilton at 3. In fact, here's a story. This is how much.
All right, if they took if they went with Icky at number three overall, it would be like if you had on your mind all Friday night to go eat at a Mexican restaurant, and then you drive up and they're closed. And so then you have to go through the drive-thru at Taco Bell, and the Taco Bell crunchy tacos are soggy from, you know, the moisture that tends to happen anymore. Like, that's what it would be like, because I just think that Hamilton, or even an edge rusher, but if Hamilton's there, I think you got to take him.
Yeah, I don't understand how they won it, especially they signed one safety. I believe they got him from, was it from Tampa? I know they re-signed Eric Murray, but we got one other guy. I was at the hospital when it happened. But all that to say, our secondary has not improved thus far in free agency. I'm very high on taking Kyle Hamilton there. A story I wanted to say is one of my friends this week is in a legal betting state, and he texted me some of the odds, and he's like, John, what do you think I should put money on? And they had Kyle Hamilton at his draft position over under 6.5. And I said, Josh, Kyle Hamilton is going third overall. And if he's not a top six pick, like, I will pay for your bet. Like, that is free money. Kyle Hamilton is the surest thing in this draft, and I think the Texans are going to take him.
Yeah. I think if you can tell what they're doing in free agency, it's kind of a tell of what they're thinking in the draft. And the fact that they have gone cheap at defensive end and at safety, and they've really just kind of added role player kind of guys, and they bring back Terrence Brooks, and they let Justin Reed get away and so forth, tells you that they're targeting that, and that they think that they can get maybe Hamilton number three, and then with the Watson first rounder, then they may be in play for Kayvon Thibodeau or the edge rusher out of Georgia.
Trayvon Walker.
Yeah. So that's what I think they're going for. But I think Hamilton's definitely number three with Houston.
Yeah. I'd be so excited about that Atlanta number eight pick. I talked about getting AJ Terrell from Atlanta. Even if we didn't, the Atlanta package would offer a number one corner, because at eight, I think everyone believes Derek Stingley or Sauce Gardner, both of which, if you jump on NFL.com, they both have higher grades than guys like J.C. Horn, who was the eighth pick in last year's draft. If you take either of them, that's the best corner on the team. Stingley's a guy that was a top five, top three pick after his freshman year. And then Gardner never allowed a touchdown in college. I mean, you want to talk about changing the secondary. So many good options at that eighth pick.
Yeah, and even if they get Terrell, you just want to be able to have an element on your defense that's your identity. And if you add Hamilton and then another young cornerback, you know, now you're the no-fly zone, you know? And then you're generating takeaways and so forth along with that. So they just – I feel like the easiest path to an identity is through the secondary this particular offseason, and they should go all in and take it. And, a lot of it hinges on the Watson trade – and where they go.
Yeah, and another thing that we really would have to upgrade, I started to write an article on the Tampa 2 before we really got into this Watson stuff, but that middle linebacker has so much responsibility in Lovie Smith's scheme. And another guy we've re-signed, Christian Kirksey, he's probably not the guy to do that. If they could invest a pick in the first three rounds or get one of these free agents, now is the time of the year when we're starting to see some surprise cuts, the so-called cap casualties. That's a great opportunity to go land a really good football player on your team. And that position is kind of the linchpin of the defense. So I'm hoping they can address that, because in addition to the secondary, that player is very responsible for allowing the Tampa 2 to work cohesively.
Right, and that was something that Miles Smith talked about, the linebackers coach, was how they had great linebackers in Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, and that they had been in that system for so long that that's why they also looked great, was because when it was 06 and, well, you know, and then 2010 when they went to the NFC Championship game again, those guys had been in the system for so long. And really, you've got younger guys, even in terms of how long they've been in Houston heading into their second season, that you still have a gap. And I think that they may need to use some draft picks or sign a guy to try to close that gap. And this would be an opportunity for Garrett Wallow to step up. But even so, I think that there could be some good linebackers in the draft that they could take. And, you know, having guys like Christian Kirksey come back, that also helps, because you do want veterans in the room that understand and can, and, you know, share some of the insights of how to play linebacker at that position. By the way, Davante Adams, his new contract, 5 years, $141.25 million with a $28.25 million average. And so the Raiders, they send back a first-round pick and probably more picks and players, according to Ian Rappaport. And then I love this in the official communications. Marcus Mosher, the Raiders Wire editor, he says, "Hi, guys. Did I miss everything while I was raking leaves?" And that's funny. They says that because right before we did the podcast, I was on the roof raking leaves off the roof. So there's something with the leaves tonight with the NFL wires.
Dude, you got to be careful doing that. And I can't – just to compose my thoughts. When I see the Davante Adams contract – tell me the first thing you didn't think about is DeAndre Hopkins and what could have been for us giving him a deal, for what we should have gotten back in a potential trade.
That's what I think about every time, is just how much when you flip a house or you flip a car and you sell it for less. That's what I feel like happened with the DeAndre Hopkins thing. I don't feel like they really shopped around, or that they really wanted to put up, or that they got scared with the fact that they had to re-sign Laremy Tunsil and that Watson was coming and all of this stuff. And I think they got spooked. And I think this is what happens, and this is a way bigger subject, but, you know, I think that's what happens when you let and an executive vice president of football operations, who was previously the vice president of team development, involved in contract negotiation. And that's what happens when you double up a coach as a general manager instead of having an actual general manager.
Mark, you're going to make a lot of fans upset with that. But yeah, Bill O'Brien he was a good coach. He was a good coach who was such a bad general manager that he couldn't overcome his mistakes. And frankly, him and Jack Easterby should never have been negotiating that trade. Jack Easterby should not have been involved in this Deshaun Watson contract. I mean, you want to talk about Easterby coming back to bite us right now. This no trade clause, Houston can't take the best deal on the table. I mean, I've been talking to people in Carolina all week, and their owner, David Tepper, was ready to outbid the room. Houston could have come away with anything they wanted, and instead we have to send them to Atlanta or New Orleans because Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien decided Deshaun will get the no trade clause.
And they did that as an overreaction and an overcorrection to DeAndre Hopkins, because they were showing Watson, hey, look, you know, don't worry about it, we'll have a no trade clause, and you can't be traded. And now he's getting traded.
Ugh.
They didn't learn. Here's what they didn't learn from. They didn't learn from Jadeveon Clowney, because when he had his franchise tender, which he didn't sign, that allowed him to say, hey, I'm not going to the Miami Dolphins. That good for me. How's that good for me? And instead he goes to the Seattle Seahawks. And that happened because in order to facilitate the trade to execute it, he had to sign the franchise tender. So he said, I'm not going to Miami. And that's what's happening here, is that bad element from the Clowney trade is right here manifesting in the no trade clause.
Ugh, I mean, I can't even talk about it.
It'll all be over. That's the, you know, really, and that's the great thing about this is it'll all be over. It'll be done with. And then Houston sports can move on. And I think that Nick Caserio has proven that he knows that he's got a plan. We'll see if it executes and it turns into a good plan. But he's not winging it, and he's got a plan. And I think this draft will tell everything. If this is a good draft, then the optimism comes back. If they miss on some guys, or, you know, the guy was there that got picked early or something, you know, if they have an optimistic draft, I think everything turns around just in terms of the perception and the feelings.
I agree. There's a lot of hope is contingent on these next 2 months going well. They need to ace this trade. They need to ace this draft. And a lot of the ill will towards the front office will go away. But that's a big if. Much easier said than done.
Yeah, and really, number one is the wins on the football field at NRG Stadium, because if those aren't there, then, you know, then it's just going to continue to be this. So, but everybody's on standby for the Deshaun Watson trade, and we'll have coverage of that as soon as it happens with Reaction at the Texans Wire. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. So, John, where can they find you?
You guys can follow me at Texans Doc. I'll be covering the trade as much as I can tomorrow. I'm taking a half day. And hopefully you'll hear Mark and I on an emergency pod. Mark, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane.
All right. Have a great evening, everyone.